I'm going to tell a story about somebody who started out not measuring stream measurements or runoff, and how we progressed from one set of equipment to another. Measuring hill slope and small drainage freeze-thaw events in the Pacific Northwest, a journey from H flumes to drop box weirs. And basically what I'm going to share with you are a lot of mistakes I made. A defining feature of the dryland crop production area of the inland Pacific Northwest is annual multiple freeze-thaw events, often associated with snowmelt, rainfall, or both. These events can be large or small. The year that first 2 years that I was there, we had three 100-year events in stream flow that came off, and so I kind of was set up to expect quite a bit of flow and runoff. These events can result in a fair amount of runoff and soil erosion. In fact, one of the small drainages I'm going to show you looked very much like this 2 years before I instrumented it. Or we could have days that were perfectly sunny, but it had been freezing for 2 weeks, the soil frost was 1 foot to 2 feet deep, and then off these small field plots we actually had runoff and erosion. So not a lot, but it adds up over the year. Beginning in 1998 and then through 2008, we collected runoff and soil erosion data from 12-meter by 40-meter plots, which is indicated here. We actually had 10 of these in this field looking at cropping practices, a 2-hectare hill slope, and watersheds that ranged in size from 6 hectares to 24 hectares. One of the defining features about all these sites that we worked on are that they were remotely located. The nearest transmission line could have been anywhere from a half mile to a mile away, so we were off the grid and entirely dependent upon batteries and solar equipment. We started out with H flumes, and we sized them using SCS curve number for 100-year return period storms and some basic assumptions about infiltration runoff ratios in frozen soils. From my observations, not from any data that I collected, but from my observations, it looked like we were losing about 50% of the rainfall that was falling on the frozen soil out there the first couple of winters I was there. We chose the H flumes because they were standard equipment, easily acquired, and generally speaking, the colleagues I talked to at the time recommended that that's what we use. For flow measurements, we used Stevens float clock-driven chart recorders, which I had in abundance from the colleague who had recently retired from the position I had just taken. And we housed all this in small covers and tried to heat them with propane space heaters. The field setups looked like this, the small field setups. Dugout put in a nice foundation under the H flumes, backfill behind it, put in a backboard to keep things from running out from underneath and around. H flumes went into the hill slope, looked like this. As you can see already, there were some changes made recently after we started. And then this is the setup at one of the larger set of drainages we had. We ran into some problems. The flumes were oversized, and the sediment deposition of the flume caused problems, even to the point where the first winter, when we were out measuring runoff from the fields, we had some nice flow developing in the fields, but the wind would actually push the water back up into the H flume, backing it up, which caused all sorts of problems for the floats and for trying to figure out what was actually running out of the field. The sediments filled up the stilling well ports, and in some cases, the stilling wells. One of the things that Robert just said was that there's lots of manuals in 1996, 97 about go out, do it, and this is how you design your study and everything, but there wasn't a lot of information on where to put things. So we were trying to collect water quality data out of the end of the flume, looking at carbon, nitrogen, and just some other minerals. And faced with freeze-thaw events, the only way we had to keep the stilling wells free from freezing, if we didn't have a heater right beside them, was to put antifreeze in them. So we ended up putting the intake behind the flume, which obviously didn't work well from this slide. They, too much sediment covered them up, or sediment covered them up and they froze. And then we also had issues of piping from behind the flume entrance. Our immediate solution to the low flow was to collect samples from the outfall. In fact, you see three scientist unit ears out there right there trying to do that. And like Robert said, the storms never came during the day. They usually started somewhere around 11 o'clock at night, and then everybody in the station would go out and collect samples for me for the next 24 to 48 hours. It didn't always work the way we planned. The space heaters worked really well as long as the temperature stayed down around minus 20 degrees C. Biggest event of the first year we had the equipment out, it had been somewhere minus 20 degrees C for something like 2 or 3 weeks. There was lots of snow on the ground, and we were really expecting some rain that night and runoff, but what we didn't expect was to go from minus 20 degrees C to about plus 18 degrees C in a period of 6 hours. And the heat load inside that cover was too much, and there went the flume. We tried to solve the deposition problem by switching to partial flumes. I called some people, talked to some people, well, you need to, the MH flume is not so good with high sediment load, so why don't you try a partial flume? Well, you tried the drop box where, but you need to have some fall. But the partial flume, it works really well because, you know, you don't need a lot of fall out of the flume, and they self-clean pretty well. So when we instrumented the next set of drainages, small watersheds, we put partial flumes in, lined the back of it with a pond liner, which ran out about 15 feet, buried about 2 feet, and that worked very well. That was very, very efficient at keeping the rodents from digging through it. For some reason, they decided not to dig through it. And, of course, trapping all the water that came down the hill and sending it to the correct place. We replaced the clock charts with pressure transducer level loggers. I think they were Global Waters. They didn't work very well for us. In our case, because we are in a situation where 99% of the time there wasn't a drop of water out there, we would drain the stilling wells or else they would freeze. And when the pressure transducer re-wetted, it wouldn't read correctly. We tried mixing up an antifreeze solution, and that fouled up the pressure relationship with depth. So that didn't work. So finally what we did was we switched to the ultrasonic level instrumentation. Partial flumes handled the runoff from no-till reasonably well. There wasn't a lot of it, and what there was extremely clean. We had some issues with freezing. This is a slide of about 10 millimeters of frozen outflow. It thawed, it froze, it thawed, it froze, and slowly, surely the flume would accumulate ice, including the fall area here in the middle of the throat. The sediment loads from the conventional tillage, they were a different story. They filled up the portals into the stilling wells. In fact, in the outfall of this partial flume, there was about 6 inches of soil that was left inside that from one of our larger storms. Partial flumes also trapped weeds. My crew's solution to that was to put a piece of plywood on both ends of it. The flume was oversized for 90% of the storms we were ever going to have, so that wasn't an issue, but of course, that's not exactly what you want to have if you do get that big event. It wasn't a very good solution. I had a conversation with Jim Bonta at some point, and I'm not too sure when it was or where it was, but he recommended this drop box wear, and so that's what I finally went to. And here's a photo of one of the larger runoff events from one of those small field scale plots that you saw. As you can see, when the water runs off that country up there, when it finally unthaws and runs, it's just like chocolate. We used Sigma samplers. I think we got a better deal on them at the time than NISCO was offering. I'm not too sure why we came up with those exactly, other than that's what we ended up with. We struggled with ways to trigger the thing so they would sample. We did just regular set time-based sampling. And finally came up with a system where we put a liquid level switch, where's my cursor, in a run-in area to the back of the plume with the intake, and that actually worked quite well. It handled small flows and even, well, quite a bit larger flows than this quite well. We still were left with issues of a lot of shovel work, because with the drop box where you do have to have a lot of fall. And given that by the time we put all this stuff in, the year we got them in, all this had to be done by hand, which the guy who works with me wasn't very happy about, but they worked. We used a combination, ultimately, at the larger drainage of a big H flume and a smaller drop box square back up inside of it. I don't know if you noticed that last slide, but actually that was a no-till. We put these in. We had 4 years of no rain, one convectional rain on frozen soil, which actually put about 6 inches of flow through that 2.5-foot H flume, which makes me think that had it been in conventional tillage, that size of flume probably would have been more appropriate, or would have actually been appropriate for what we had to deal with. Anyway, 2 minutes, 1 minute, very quickly. Simple lessons, but practical lessons. The appropriate equipment for this region is a self-cleaning weir capable of accommodating a wide range of flows. We really felt that the ultrasonic level recorders worked well. We never got beyond the point of just putting one on a weir. I think that ideally we should have had two, just for QAQC and assurance the data level was recorded. One of the things we never did was we never put a fully heated insulated equipment shed around the whole thing. Part of it was financial issues, and part of it was in the state of Oregon we have some pretty strict building codes, and putting buildings up out in the middle of a field can be problematic. One of the unresolved issues in our part of the country is really the SCS curve number doesn't work very well for sizing flumes in this region.